Well, Genesis 40, the butler and the baker. There's no doubt that God brings people into our lives for a purpose. And you see this very clearly with Joseph and these two gents here. Because there's a theme here of commonality of experience. The butler and the baker had been thrown into prison, probably for no reason. Now, you may recall the stories of how Stalin, in his years of running the Soviet Union, was similar. He was always falsely accusing his butlers and his cooks and having them murdered. It only lasted a few years, and it was said in Russian that to be appointed as Stalin's butler or his cook was basically a death sentence, because he was going to get paranoid about you and make a false accusation and get you bumped off pretty quick. And so it's pretty likely that these guys were in jail under false accusation. And so straight away, there's a commonality of experience, because it was the same, of course, with Joseph. And he talks about how Potiphar had been his lord throughout Genesis 39. And here, the king of Egypt is called their lord. They had done something wrong against their lords. And verse 2, Pharaoh was angry. Well, just like it says, Genesis 39, verse 19, and Potiphar was angry. So all the way through, the people that God brings into your life have some commonality of experience with you, and that's why they've been brought into your life, so that you can witness to them. And themes repeat in your life. Now, you see it very clearly with Joseph, that when he was in Potiphar's house, everything was put under him. In the end, when he was in the prison, also everything was put under him. See verse 4, the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph. And assigned is that word used in Genesis 39, verse 4, where Potiphar's house was assigned to Joseph. So verse 5, they were bound in the prison. Psalm 105:18 says that they bound Joseph with harsh fetters, presumably at one point, because now he is like the manager, the duty manager of the jail. But the point is, he went through that period that Psalm 105:18 talks about, when Joseph was cruelly bound with harsh fetters, so that he could relate to these guys who had been bound with fetters. And this is a really important thing to understand, I think, because why do we suffer? Well, it's multifactorial. To say you suffer to make you a better person, I think, is, well, I can say it's not true totally, but I don't think it's a particularly satisfying answer, and I don't think it's anywhere near the full answer. 2 Corinthians 1 says that the reason why we suffer anything is so that we might help others who are suffering those same things. And so you see this supremely in the experience of the Lord Jesus, that he suffered all the things that sinners suffer, right up to the death of a criminal. He, by God's grace, tasted death for every man. And on a smaller level, it is the same with us, that we go through stuff that may or may not actually improve you as a person, but the point is you go through it so that you can then connect with somebody else. Now, there may be things that you've gone through that at the time you think, and even for years afterwards, you think, well, nobody would even understand that. I've had things like that. Well, I thought, put that down to experience, Duncan. It's not even worth talking to anyone about it, because nobody would really believe me. No one would really understand it. And then, lo and behold, you bump into some guy who starts talking about their life, and you think, wow, look, that guy went through pretty much in essence the same as what I did. And you tell them your story. And it's so true, quite a Paul Tournier that I come out with often, that doctrine divides, but experience unites. And that is how it is, that the bond of unity really is through, in practice, in reality, in real life, it is through shared and common experience, not on paper statements of faith or fellowship. It's not a basis of fellowship, really. It is experience of the Lord and his hand in your life, which is the basis for fellowship. Now, all that can be wasted if you don't open yourself up to others, if you don't show yourself fragile, if you don't show yourself weak, and if you're simply tripping along to church and talking about the weather and state of the nation and so forth, well, yeah, you're not going to have that much of a dynamic experience of this. But if you're sitting there over coffee and whatever, having a chat from the heart with folks and really engaging with each other, it's incredible what people have been through. People, I thought, just trooped along to church meetings week after week and had fairly boring lives. When you actually engage with them, you think, wow, this poor woman has been through hell and high water. I mean, she really has. And you just wouldn't think so, because she doesn't look like that. You know, she sort of looks normal and acts, you know, like normal. So, yeah, this is an appeal, I suppose, to empower all that stuff that we went through by realizing that one reason you went through it is so that you might engage with others. And so you see, this is how Joseph did with the butler and the baker. And they said to him, verse 8, we've dreamed a dream. And actually, there were two dreams. There was the dream of the butler, the dream of the baker. And, of course, Joseph had had two dreams. And, in essence, looking at the chain of events and how the chain of events had worked out, he was in jail because of his dreams. And so Joseph says to them, well, interpretations belong to God. And he's absolutely certain in the way he speaks to these men that, look, dreams come true. Yeah, a dream from God, it comes true. But he must have been thinking, and what about me? You know, I had dreams from God. I was supposed to be exalted. My brothers were supposed to come bowing down to me. Well, it never came true for me. But as Psalm 105 says, the word of the Lord tried him. He was tested. And I think if he responded positively to this, as I'm sure he did, he would have thought, well, these guys' dreams came true, and so will mine. And he saw there how one man was exalted and another man died. It was almost as if one was saved by grace and the other wasn't. And I think the outcome of all this was that Joseph realized that if you are saved by grace, then you should try to seek to save others. Because he begs the butler, he says, please, please remember me for good. God's going to save you by grace, my friend. Please remember me and get me out of here. And, of course, Joseph also learned that lesson, that he was saved by grace, and so he devoted himself to saving the whole of Egypt, the whole of the surrounding world, and particularly, of course, his brothers. And I think that's why, in this otherwise curious set of tests that he gives his brothers, he wants them to learn the lesson of saving others, because he wants them to come back quickly to save Simeon, whom he kept behind, and then business with Benjamin, setting him up as a thief when he wasn't. He wants the brothers to be willing to sacrifice themselves for their brother. Well, when he says, remember me, to the to the butler, it's almost a pathetic plea. And, of course, it's the same desperate plea that he made in Genesis 42, when he was in the pit. I mean, in Genesis 42, 21, the brothers remember. Do you remember how he desperately pleaded with us when he was in the pit and we didn't listen to him? So he'd had that experience of not being heard when he needed grace. And he'd had it from the hands of his brothers when he was in the pit, and he had it again now from the butler, please remember me, and he doesn't. Well, he could have taken that two ways. He could have said, yeah, in this hard world, when you need someone, they're not there. And, you know, you can look at your life as the cup half full or the cup half empty. You can see it half full with a lot of good friends and etc., a lot of good things in your life, or you can see it half empty. You know, when the chips were really down, there was absolutely nobody there for me. When I begged for mercy, when I begged for someone to be there, no. Maybe you haven't had that, although I think, as is said in this house, I think those of you listening to me will know what I mean, that there are times when it does go like that. When, remember me, you're desperate. And you're not heard. Now, you can take that in two ways. You can get bitter about it and say, yeah, no one was there for me. No one really came through for me, so for sure, I ain't going to come through for anybody else. That's not how life works. Or you can look at it as we should, and as Joseph did, that, okay, when I needed to be remembered, when I was in the pit, and I said, remember me, save me, and they didn't hear. When I said to the butler, remember me, and he forgot me. Yeah, I'm not going to be like that. And of course, he dedicates himself, as we know, to the salvation of Egypt, the salvation of the world, the salvation of his brothers. He took it positively. He took those negative experiences of other people's failure to be gracious positively. It didn't make him bitter, didn't make him hard. This is what I love about Joseph. It made him the other way, that he wanted to be as they ought to have been to him. And you see his lovely positive attitude really in verse 15. He says, look, indeed, I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews. I was kidnapped. No, he wasn't kidnapped. His brothers wanted to kill him because they were jealous and bitter. Then they decided not to. They sold him to some traders who they saw bombing along on their camels when they chucked Joseph into a pit intending to kill him by thirst and starvation. He wasn't kidnapped. But that is the very generous way that he wished to express it. All the way through, you see his huge generosity of spirit. I mean, he doesn't, for example, say what I think I would have said, that look here, I'm here in this prison because of a completely stupid pack of lies that was told by a powerful woman who was sexually obsessed because her husband was a eunuch. So she got the hots on me, and I told her no. And so she came up with a load of lies, and so I got chucked in here. He doesn't say anything like that. He's far more positive and generous-spirited. And how did he come to that generosity of spirit, which was, of course, so attractive to other people? Well, because he had not been shown it, but he was determined to show it himself.